This is Evenings with Louise Saunders.
There's an awful lot going out in your backyard. It's also going on the front verge and maybe at the park down the end of the street. I'm talking about insects. With me is entomologist, PhD candidate and science communicator, Shasta Henry. Hello, Shasta.
Hi there.
Well, there's a lot of kids at home at the moment. It may be school holidays. Is it right if you can go to your backyard, out into the front verge, out in the street where you are safe, hopefully, or down the park? There's a lot that you can find and pick up to study?
There absolutely is. Part of my difficulty in walking anywhere swiftly is that insects are absolutely everywhere. There's about one insect per centimetre square of the Earth's surface, although they're not gathered in that sort of homogeneous carpet. They're under stones and they're visiting flowers. But they are in practically every habitat, and they're really enmeshed into our urban environment. And so if you're interested in going on a bug hunt, you can absolutely do it in your backyard, front yard, flower pot. There are ways.
Well, let's talk about catching them, because I think everyone, yeah. I used to go to the street behind us, which when it rained, their drains were deeper, so they ran thick with tadpoles, so that was always fun. So if you want to catch something, how can you make yourself a bit of a trap without having to spend $20 down at the supermarket to buy a bug catcher? What can you do?
Absolutely. It's interesting. Insects are quite simple in some ways. So a lot of official entomological scientific equipment is almost embarrassingly simple. Like there's a pitfall trap, which is just a plastic drinking cup in a hole in the ground.
Oh, wow. So you just stick it there and wait.
Yeah, you set the trap and you wait. So dig a hole that is kind of nicely the dimensions of a plastic drinking cup. And so that's kind of deep enough for them to fall in and hopefully not be able to crawl out again. But you can use anything of similar dimensions. You dig a hole, you bed the cup down flush with the surface of the ground, try and make it kind of neat and contained. And then anything that happens to be walking across the ground, which is largely spiders, ants, beetles, cursorial insects.
What does that mean?
Cursorial is walking across the surface. And so those groups of insects will be targeted by this specific kind of pitfall trap. And so you're basically making a hole in their world that they run the risk of falling into.
Yeah. So like is there a good like a time bear of day? It is like a bear trap. And if you catch a bear, you'd be really lucky. Should you put it out overnight, do you think, or put it out first thing in the morning? What's a good time to do it?
Yeah, if you prepare it during the day and then sort of leave it operating overnight, a lot of insects that do run around will do so at night because they want to be undercover and sort of camouflaged and protected during the day. So generally, overnight is when a pitfall trap will be active. Then if you wanted to, and so then you'll have a sort of a catch. Be cautious because they'll be alive, and insects can sting and insects can bite. So this is a do under adult supervision activity. But then you can tip them into a glass jar, and I've got some identification tools online as well to maybe try and figure out what you've captured.
So if you've got something and you don't know what it is, as you say, be careful, don't stick your finger in there because it might fight back.
Yeah.
What can you do then? What are some of the things you'd look at on your insect to think, okay, they might be something that sets it apart from another insect if you're trying to work out what it is?
So basically every living organism has a shopping list. I've kind of distilled the concept down to for myself. A shopping list of body parts. Like mammals are mammals because we have mammaries, and in fact we make milk, and we're the only group of organisms that have that characteristic, and so that's what makes mammals mammals. That and lips, which made me look at my
really?
Pet dog and cat in a very different way.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? Don't really think about them having lips. Yes. So what do insects have? Nothing. Just a mouth.
So just a mouth, yeah, and birds don't have lips and fish don't actually have real lips. So the thing that makes insects is six legs, four wings, and they've got that segmented body with three segments, two eyes and two antennae. So if you think about it, How many legs does a spider have, Louise?
Eight.
Eight. So can it be an insect?
Oh, if I call spiders insects, someone will always send me a text and say they're not insects, they're arachnids.
They are arachnids. They're arachnids because they have eight legs. They're an eight-legged invertebrate, and insects are six-legged invertebrates.
And do spiders have segmented bodies? Some do, don't they?
They do have segmented bodies, and their insects have head thorax, which is the chesty part that the legs are attached to, and abdomen, which is the squishy bit at the back. Spiders and arachnids, like ticks and mites and scorpions, are all arachnids, and they have a cephalothorax. So they've got a two-segmented body, and their head and thorax are sort of squished together, and they've got the abdomen at the back.
Yeah.
So again, the shopping list sets them apart. Arachnids and insects have different lists of ingredients that make them. So I've run this kind of shopping list concept all the way through, and I've made a number of resources. They're in a photo album on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You can find this information out online, but I think it takes a bit of skill to kind of distill out the simplest parts that you want to work with your 4-year-old or your 6-year-old or your 12-year-old to just have some fun in the backyard. So I've put that shopping list concept into an individual picture for different orders of insects. So like a dragonfly has four wings, and they're all quite symmetrical, so they're quite similar in shape. They're transparent, and they've got a really long abdomen at the back. And that's what makes that dragonfly group stand out from all the other insects. And some people might be listening along and going, yeah, that's super obvious. And yeah, it is super obvious. So I'm really just sort of putting together often what people can already recognize. We know what dragonflies look like. We know what moths look like. And often just adding a few labels or a few, this is what you recognise.
Shasta's Facebook page is Shasta Henry, S-H-A-S-T-A, Henry, a.k.a. Bug Girl, and you'll find just exactly what we're talking about. You've got some advice there too, Shasta, on what you can do so that you're not dealing with live insects, if you make them dead insects. What's the best way to do that?
Indeed. I try to be empathetic. All of my insects are dead insects because I also collect them to turn into data for my scientific work or into collections in the entomology lab. But some families will be comfortable making live insects dead ones and some won't. So I guess all of the descriptions we've been using so far is to keep the insects alive.
Mm.
But if you're creeped out by live insects, or if your kids just aren't engaged, like sometimes they just really want to catch stuff and hold them in their hands. And I think that the learning value of dead insects is worth it. I do. So if you want to capture your prey, mix up a little bit of salty and soapy water. The salt helps draw some of the moisture out of the insects so they don't go moldy. And the soap breaks the surface tension so that the insects will sink in and drown. So if you put a little, you know, maybe half full of your pitfall trap, of your plastic drinking cup, any insect that walks into your bear trap will sink and they'll all be there in the morning. And you can do the same with your pan traps. So you can leave them out for a few hours and they'll just catch any of the insects that land on the surface of your yellow, blue, green pan trap. And you can come back, and so you can sort of set and forget, which can make it give different access for different child's attention spans and sort of the other ways you have to weave this activity into your day. Just keep in mind that you don't sort of leave it where your pets will
get
into it.
Yes, good idea.
They out in the field, one of the banes of pitfall traps is that wombats like to poop in them. I have no idea why, but they're...
It's like a statement of some kind, isn't it?
Yeah. On all science broadly, I think. But I think they're attracted to the disturbed soil, and then they maybe to mark the territory and be like, this is mine. And so you sometimes have to reinforce your traps quite profoundly. You add fences and add caps, and you've got to keep the rain out and got to stop the wombats from crapping in them. It's the Wild West out there in entomology land.
See, that's where your job's so different to mine. I never have to deal with wombats crapping on any part of my work. I hope people do send you some pictures and some drawings and some countings and all the things they've been up to, because it would be great to know that there's so much to explore and people are exploring it out in the backyard.
Absolutely, and even your own bright ideas. As I don't actually have my own children, some of this is hypothetical, and so if somebody comes up with a way that's more reasonable, makes better sense, or that their kids just loved, I'm super, super keen to hear about that, you know, and share it with other learners too.
Good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again, and we'll probably still be in isolation, so we'll see what we can come up with next time. Thanks, Shasta.
Pleasure.